Welcome, everyone. Today we have a special guest. We're taking a little break from our stories for an author and lovely human being. Her name is Bonnie Buckner, Bucknerr, Bonnie Buckner. And I know season nine has been all about listening to your stories of healing and transformation through yoga and yoga therapy. And I think Bonnie fits right into this idea that we're exploring this season, which is who are we as humans? What do our inner selves trying to tell us? How can we connect to who we really are? How can we come home to self? And Bonnie does this through dreaming, both sleep dreaming as well as awake dreaming, what some people might call daydreaming, and really helps us understand the neuroscience behind what's happening in night dreaming and daydreaming, and how we can use both of these to transform our way of being in the world, to understand our blocks, to understand who that little bouncer is telling us that, no, you can't do that. No, you can't have that. No, you'll never succeed at that. Don't even think about that. Your parents told you you can't do that, and somebody else told you you shouldn't do that. That bouncer in our brain that is like blocking all of our creativity and our transformational ability. Like, we need to work with the bouncer and say, hey, we're going to allow the daydreaming to happen. We're going to listen to the night dreaming, and we're actually going to move through the blocks that are keeping us from being who we really are, who we came here to be. So I think you'll hear some lovely ideas, very yogic ideas from Bonnie in this interview. And Bonnie has even taught at Kripalu. Some of you may know her from Kripalu Yoga Center. So let's go meet Bonnie. And this is a really sweet interview. I think you'll enjoy it. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. This is Amy Wheeler, and I want to thank all the people who've come forward in 2025 to tell their stories. We are completely booked through the end of the year, so we will not be taking any more stories. In fact, many weeks I'm recording two every Thursday because so many people were willing to share of themselves, to be generous and gracious, to help other people to suffer less. It's been quite a year. We're so happy that we have another several months of stories to share on the Yoga Therapy Hour. But just to say that at this time, we're no longer needing people to volunteer. The response has been amazing. I feel overjoyed with so many of you willing to give of yourself to help others suffer less. We thank you. We're glad you're here. Let's go see our guest for today. Welcome, Bonnie, to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We're so glad you're here.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me.
First of all, I just want to say thank you to our mutual friend, Beth Grossman. She has sent me so many amazing, interesting authors. And now that I've read your book, you're another one of them that I just can't believe how many people Beth has contact with that make it on our show and really have so many deep ties to yoga, even though it may not appear that way on the surface. Most of what you wrote in your book is very yogic. I don't know if you know that.
Sure. Yeah, Beth is an amazing human being in every way. She's just fantastic.
Yeah, I can tell that. So, your book called The Secret Mind: Unlock the Power of Dreams to Transform Your Life. I was really, number one, at first I thought, oh, I've read a lot of books on dreams. I've interviewed a lot of people on dreams. I wasn't like all into it, as you know, because I was a little late to the game reading the book this week. But within the first chapter, I was like, this is different. This is unique. This is something I haven't heard before. And one of the first things that caught me was that you not only talked about dreaming in our sleep, but you also talked about daydreams as a transformational path. So, can you tell us about dreaming and dreams and daydreams? What brings those things together?
Well, we're dreaming all the time. So we are constantly bringing our life into being vis-a-vis our own imagining of it. And within daydreaming, part of that daydreaming process is getting really quiet and away from, goal-directed conversation because, we're very, very busy people. We have a lot of to-do lists and activities and things that we want to accomplish, but we also have an inner life. And daydreaming is when we kind of shut off the goals and kind of lean back into that inner life, and our imagination kicks in, and we start to imagine what different possibilities might be and kind of try them on and feel them out. And one kind of easy way of sort of connecting to that, everybody I know has at some time or another been in a nice long shower and suddenly, oh, that's the answer. Oh, that's what I need to do. It's because we've tapped into that non-linear imaginative space. Which is the same from a neurological perspective. It's the same part of our cognitive processing that is active when we are sleep dreaming.
Okay, let's go right there. The default network. You had me at default network in the book. I was like, oh, this woman knows neuroscience. Can you tell us a little bit about the default network and how that's active in both daydreaming and sleep dreaming?
Yeah, so we have different ways of cognitively processing information, life, experience. And it's really important to have that broad definition because our modern world thinks about statistics, information, data, bits. And there's a whole lot of experience that doesn't fall into that very narrow definition. So we have two ways of big swipes here. Of processing, and one is the thing that we think of as thinking. So if I say, what is 2 + 2? We think we're thinking, and we are, but we're thinking in a certain way, and it's the executive network that is doing that kind of thinking. When we're imagining and working through emotions and working through possibilities and understanding, what are the consequences of our actions, like how did someone feel about something? It's image-based, not verbal-based, and it's using the default network.
Okay, so some people listening are going to think about, oh, that sounds like left brain and right brain. And I think neuroscience is starting to really acknowledge that, look, the left and the right have functions, but they're working together
They
a lot.
do. They do. And things are more nested, and as you put it, they work together, they talk together than previously thought. And actually, that's a great thing to bring up because the executive network that's doing all that very active, outer focused, linear kind of thinking is meant to talk to the default network, which is doing all the imagining. That's called functional mutuality. They're meant to talk to each other. So we're meant to imagine, and then we're meant to do something with that imagining. And we go back and forth between these two modes of cognitive processing all the time, all day long. Unfortunately, there's a lot more pressure on us these days to lean into that executive network, to add things up, to be goal focused. But it's really good for us when we gaze out the window, take a little pause, and daydream. So when we go to sleep, there's a significant difference. That whole executive network is literally taken offline. That puts us square in that imaginative space of reflection, emotions, memories, ideas. And that's what makes sleep dreaming so juicy because when we have ideas and we're awake, that executive network is so quick to slap it down. It goes into judgments, criticisms, And so that little bouncer is taken away. We get to sleep. We get to confront. Yeah, we get to confront all the big ideas that have been waiting for us to pay attention to them all day.
Oh, it kind of breaks my heart a little bit because I know so many of us as children, depending on where we grew up, I grew up in Iowa, and like I would literally sit outside in the grass with my dog for hours daydreaming. it's kind of thought of as a waste of time, or we're too rushed, we have too much to do, or we put children down. Oh, that child is a daydreamer, even adults, right? I hear you saying is that daydreaming is actually the seed of manifestation in our lives to
It
bring
is.
forward, to change our lives in positive ways.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, we're not robots. We're not just meant to do, 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 do. We're also experiencing life. We are human beings, and we're meant to be being and experiencing and loving and doing all kinds of things, not just actively producing something. So the more we allow ourselves to daydream, the more we can imagine different ways of being in our life. For example, I used the love word, that L word. Imagine different ways of relationships and different ways that we can resolve conflicts with other people.
So why do you think daydreaming is often dismissed and maybe even pathologized? Like, why do we do that? Do you have any ideas? Because this seems like such an important, powerful thing that we should be bringing forward in people. And yet society, as well as our little internal bouncer, is like, nope, I'm going to smack that idea down. You can't do that for X, Y, Z reason.
The same reason that people know something inside themselves and still go around and ask all their friends what their friends think they should do. It is so discombobulating to people and has been for thousands of years to really encounter mystery and encounter and give voice to their own inner feelings, what they want to do, where they want to go. Think about. You talked about adults and how they treat dreams in kids. Well, let's talk about it in that vocalized way when the kid says, I want to grow up and be a photographer, or, and the parent says, well, they don't make any money, get a plan B. So we're constantly separating ourselves from our own inner dreaming, our own imagining of who we want to be in this world and how we want to live, then we perpetuate that because we live in a world that says if you've seen it and someone has done a study on it and you can look that up online, then it's real. Otherwise, no.
Yeah. I remember as a child, I said I wanted to grow up and be president. And my parents didn't knock it down. I mean, I'm sure in their minds they were like, yeah, right. But they didn't tell me I couldn't. That little daydream, allowing it to blossom however it needed to.
That's exactly it. Our inner imaginings are carrying an energy of something. How that unrolls and unfolds might take different things. You may not be president of the United States,
Clearly.
but that energy of being a leader, organizing people, you've started a podcast, all of that energy is still there. Part of understanding dreams and daydreaming is what is the energy of this? And then understanding that that energy can find different containers.
That is so beautifully said. I love that. So, can you share a moment in your life when you allowed a daydream and maybe you nourished it and it kind of became a breakthrough and you actually were able to see that come to fruition?
For me, when you ask that question, my whole life has been lived as a dreamer. And so it's a very fluid thing for me. What is daydream? What is sleep dream? It becomes a sort of like constant inner dialogue for me. So I've had many times when my inner dreaming has moved me in certain ways and also ways that I've been responding in waking time. I'll give an example. When I was in my 20s, I was 20 years old, I moved to Los Angeles and I really wanted a job selling syndicated television. That was just something that I wanted to do. I had met different, mentors in Texas where I lived, and they were all like, you have to go to LA. And I met someone who worked at the time at Universal and ran the research department there and said, this is one way to move into that. So I began meeting with this guy all the time and driving him crazy, really, like asking him, give me some free research things to do for you. I want to show you that I can cut it, all of this. And then I met a guy who had started a small company, and he offered me a job to go straight into sales. And everything inside me lit up, and I knew that was it. The company only had like 8 people at that time. And that very day, this guy, after a year of me bugging him from Universal Studios, called me and said, I can't believe it, but I have a job opening for you. And I knew I had to turn that down. And that was a really difficult thing to do because I had literally bugged this guy for a year horribly, like, please, 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 begging. So I met with him and I said, I've been offered this job. He knew who was offering me the job. And I said, I got to take it. And he said, are you crazy? That's a startup. I have a studio behind me. The pay was different. And I said, I can't explain it, but it's in my inside. That's the job for me. So I took it. 5 years later, I'm having dinner with the guy that I had bugged because we stayed friends. We're still
He
friends.
still had dinner with you after all this?
We're still friends. We're really great friends, actually. And we were having dinner, and he just suddenly said, you were right. And I said, about what? And he said, remember 5 years ago, you turned down this offer, you took the other offer. He goes, you were right. How did you know? And I said, I didn't know far down. I don't look far down the line. I just knew in that moment how my inner self was responding.
Wow. I mean, do you have any idea through neuroscience what the mechanism is happening when you had that inner feeling of, I call it aliveness or vitality, or there's like a quickening? Like, do you know what's happening now, or is it still kind of mysterious?
I don't place it in the brain. I think we're much more than a brain. And I think that's one of the things that neuroscience finds a limit in.
Yeah.
For me, it's much broader and it's more of a body thing and beyond the much bigger body, the capital B body that we inhabit.
I don't know. The neuroscience I'm studying as a yoga person is now everyone's starting to think of it as the nervous system in an embodied way, that it's not just up here between your ears. So I would say maybe your nervous system and your deeper mind kind of were like, yes, go for the job.
Yeah, and there's even more to us than that. There's this sort of inner soul or I that is inhabiting this nervous system thing, and which is why I don't like to talk in parts too much because we're more than parts.
Yeah, I love it. I'd like to take just a moment away from the episode to tell you about something that's really precious to us here at the Optimal State. And that's our Monday Night Sangha. There are so many of us that have come together for several years now on Monday nights. It's about an hour and a half class where we really set ourselves up for the week. We start with talking about one of the Yoga Sutra of Patanjali's as it pertains to our topic of the month. So in November, that is kind of reflecting on 2025 and thinking about how to go inward for November and December and really settle ourselves before we move into the new year. So we'll choose Yoga Sutra that are all about reflecting, all about going inward, and then possibly towards the end of the month, talk about setting intentions with powerful manifestation and how do we have a great 2026? So that's our topic for November. We do a little discussion, we do some postures, some breath work, a little bit of yoga nidra meditation, and then we come back at the end for another discussion. These are really potent sessions to start your week off right. We invite all of you. You can be there live or watch the recording, but we would love to have you with us on Monday nights, especially as we move into 2026. All right, everybody, let's get back to the podcast and thank you for listening. All right. So I want to go into a little bit of the night dreaming. We've talked about daydreaming, but I want to go into the night dreaming. And I have a few areas I'd love to ask you about, but the first one that's alive for me is, like, I had this dream the other night that was so strange. I didn't have any idea what it meant, and I wrote it down as you suggest, write it down in great detail, and but I literally have no idea what the dream meant. So then what?
What are the feelings of that dream? That's the then what, is to feel into the images. You know, we often take a sort of literal approach to the images. You know, I dreamed a pirate ship, for example. Well, I don't know what that means. But what's the energy of a pirate ship? It's going somewhere, it's doing something a little rebellious, a little outside of the box. There's all kinds of things that I can use to characterize the energy of a pirate ship.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'll just briefly tell you a few parts of it
Yeah.
and then the feelings I had. So it was my old house out in California. I've now moved to Minnesota. There was a mama bear, a huge bear, and four cubs, and I thought they were so cute and adorable, but then I saw her walking towards me. I was like, I better get in the house. So I ran in the house, and then there was an injured mountain lion in my house. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's danger in here. This mountain lion's gonna eat my cats, which I didn't want. And so I was gently like pushing the mountain lion out of the house, trying not to hurt it, but also knowing I couldn't have a mountain lion in my house. So, you know, some might think, oh, that must have been a terribly scary dream. But in reality, that going to the feeling sensation that you're talking about, I felt a ton of compassion for that mountain lion, and I knew I had to get it out. So it didn't do any damage, but I also knew it was injured and it might not make it out there. And I was really sad about that. So, on one level, I can see like the bears and the mountain lions, what the heck is all that about? But really, I think if I go with what you just said, there's mama bear energy, there's protecting my babies, just like the bear was protecting her babies. But there's compassion in there too. So, I don't know. What do you think of that?
Well, there's a couple of things that do stand out to me. And one of the things is I talk in the book about a necessity. So I would call this a clear dream, which means that it's showing block and it's showing potential. And there's one little thing that can happen that can change the dream from unresolved to resolved. So when we think about resolved, what that's speaking to is homeostasis or balance. So all of us understand balance, you know, it's built into our physical body. When we're hungry, our stomach growls. When we eat, we're sated. It's balanced again. So there's an imbalance in this dream, and every aspect of the dream is an aspect of the dreamer. So as you very much understood, I am the mother bear, but I'm also the mountain lion that's injured, and I'm also the old house. Even though I've moved beyond. So, getting of the mountain lion out of the house, there's still a little conflict there because I want it out of the house, but I'm worried it won't make it. It's still injured. So, if you were to do a waking dream exercise, you could just simply go back into the dream and find a way, because this is where we are all amazing. We all have all the tools we need to solve our own problems through our imagination. So you can go back into that dream and do what is needed to fix the injured mountain lion. I don't know if it needs a bandage. I don't know what it needs. You will know, and you'll know how to do it when you go back in.
Is that a form of like reimagining the
Yeah, it's
situation?
a waking dream exercise. So it's just re-entering the dream. We're dreaming all the time, remember? So it's not that I had that dream past tense. There's a part of it, especially now because we've talked about it, that's been brought back to present tense. So, one of the great things for me about dreaming and how quickly it works, because our body knows how to heal itself. I don't need to know what made the mountain lion injured. All I need to do is go into my waking dream again and fix it. That's it.
That is so fascinating because if I were to do that, I would want to fix the mountain lion. I'd want to make him a little area in the house and help them heal and, you know. And I actually did that with a wolf for 2 years in real life.
Oh.
That far out for me.
Yeah, not at all. And these kinds of waking dream exercises are quick, and the image will change as we address it, because what we're doing is we're plugging into our body's healing mechanism, which is all about image. As soon as you start doing whatever it is you're going to do, I hope you do a waking dream exercise after our podcast here. Whatever you do to help this mountain lion, the images are going to shift because the body is in dialogue with us. Things aren't static.
It already has, Bonnie. I'm just in this 5 minute little thing we've been doing. Like, I've been feeling bad about the mountain lion probably going to get eaten out there. But just the thought that, oh, in my dream or daydream, I could help it heal. Like, I already feel lighter about the dream.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't have to send it out there. Oh, wow. So, are there certain types of night dreams that kind of signal a major life shift or healing opportunity? I don't even know what I'm asking, but I guess I can't imagine, like, if you dream the ocean or if you dream a mountain, is there something that shifts, like, okay, this is a big one, pay attention, things are transforming?
You know, we're always transforming. We tend to forget that. And we live in such a world that chops things into little discrete boxes, let's say. But we're constantly transforming. I am different right now than I was when I woke up this morning. I am actually hungry now because my day has progressed. So I've gone from being full after breakfast to now I'm hungry. So we're always transforming, and when we get that, really get that in mind, the bigger picture transformation, emotions, things like this, belief systems, patterns, becomes lighter to do. Our own fixing becomes a lighter process to do. So when it comes to dreaming, we have many different kinds of dreams, and all of those dreams are part of the transformation process. If there's a nightmare, it's signaling that there's some kind of knot in our energy around an emotion, anger, or fear. We can do a waking dream exercise, go back in, unknot it. It's very simple. We have sometimes very, what we call great dreams, where we get a message, also transformational. But here's the caveat. All dreams are meant to help us transform. They're part of the transformation process, but it's all dependent on us. What am I going to do with that dream when I wake up? Am I going to pay attention to it? Am I going to go back in and do something with it? Am I going to heed the message? How am I going to understand it for myself? And then what am I going to do with it?
I'm listening to you, and I think you had told me earlier that you work with some like high-level performers. So
Yeah.
could they even use this night dreaming, daydreaming, all the time dreaming process to change their perception of who they are and what they're able to do in their performance life?
Absolutely. That's what this work is all about. So I have the Institute for Dreaming and Imagery, and we work with leaders in organizations and government, and we work with performing arts foundations and professional creatives. And in all cases, it's about learning through the material of dreams, understand who I am, where I'm blocked, and how to address those blocks in order to move my potential forward instead of being stuck, move my potential forward and bring it into fruition, into my actual living. And when it comes to professional creatives, we also have the Dreamer World Artist Lab, where we really talk about the creative process. And we work with creatives, and it's not just for professional creatives. We also have a lot of leaders from different organizations who take these classes, because in all cases, everybody needs to understand creativity and how to work with it and how to use it. So we do a lot of classes around that. We have different classes like project dreaming, where we work with projects as if it were a dream itself, using the steps we use at the Institute, and just helping people understand where their own hiccups are around the creative process.
I am totally getting this. I'm totally getting this. There's a project that I am stalled on, that I am blocked on. I can imagine that this is the work I need. I don't need more tech. I don't need more ideas. I've got AI. Like, I need to figure out what's blocked in me that's stopping this from moving forward.
Yeah. And you know, all of us are creative, all of us. And a huge point of my book is that we are constantly creating. We imagine, we create, we imagine, we create over and over again, all throughout the day in our lives. When it comes to creating a thing, I'm going to create a new, you know, business venture, or I'm going to create a new performance, or I'm going to create a new piece of music. And we kind of like focus in on that creating. It's a wonderful window to show us where I have certain patterns and belief systems that hold me back, not just there, but it's going to be the same that's holding me back in all parts of my life. It's just that by focusing up around a creative project, it comes to light.
Ah, interesting. The block had its way to express through this project, even though it's there for most things in life.
It's always there. We're of one piece. We are a whole thing. And so if I have a belief system of, I don't know, I had a client once who had a belief system he picked up from family that creatives never make money. Okay. And he was an incredibly successful musician, and yet that was the belief system. And it was so striking to see that this person who's already successful is still having this belief system, which had kind of come to a head at a certain point where he could move to even a bigger jump. So it was at that moment it kind of came to a head. But that belief system, creatives can't make money. There's something behind that, which is I'm not allowed to express what I really want to express and to really dream myself into being. And so he, through this work, was able to really encounter that. It's all through image and it's all through dreaming. Work with the images of it and move beyond that. And when we do, going back to your dream, when you work with this injured mountain lion, everything inside the body, all of the energy, when that gets addressed, is going to shift. And if it was constricted, it's going to expand. It's going to open out. Then we have, it's like getting the green light. We can go forward and do what it is we need to do.
And why images? Why these inner images? I mean, why couldn't you write out a SMART goal? Is it because you need to be using that part of your brain and embodiment? Kind of what we talked about at the beginning, where there's the logical thinking, prefrontal cortex versus the images and the feelings and the sensations. Does it have to happen in that image, feeling, sensation area?
Absolutely. Images are the language of our experiencing. They're the language of our body. And let's even just do a little test here. Think about it. When you look at a photograph, maybe in a magazine that's a full image, all the feelings, emotions, and understandings that come from that photograph are so holistic versus, and even the way you kind of talked about it, the way your voice changed, bullet points, yeah, action plans. There's no fluidity to that.
There's no space.
There's no space. It's too rigid and restrictive.
Yeah. It's interesting because the biggest, most amazing things that have happened to me in my life have never been pre-planned. I've never been able to use my agenda to make them happen. And in fact, that always fails. They are things where I've just created space and I'm kind of like, well, what's next? I'm standing in this cold, dark hallway. I have no idea. And then something happens that I wasn't expecting, you know? And I think that's really interesting to think about. It can't be rigid. It can't be bullet points. It can't be so linear.
No. And also images are, I mean, it's true. It's a picture is worth a thousand words. It's where we get moved. Nobody makes a decision, and neuroscience is finally starting to understand this thanks to Antonio Damasio's work. Nobody makes a decision from rational thought. There's always an emotion. If you think about it, we could meet today for the podcast, we could meet tomorrow. If both of those days are completely free, it's some kind of, yeah, but you know, this day is going to be a little better. It's always some kind of emotional impulse that causes us to make a decision. Now let's talk about big decisions in our life. Big fear stops us. Big desire moves us. It's always some kind of like moving towards or moving away. But the bullet points, no. They make us rigid. They make us robotic. We enter that word should. I should be doing this. I told myself I was going to have this goal by this day. I should be doing that. It's constricting. Images are opening and they're also part of our action. Linear thought has a beat away. It's either thinking backwards, things that have happened to me before, or forwards, what I could do. Images are right now. They're present tense. So if I'm moving with my images, I'm changing right now. I'm not thinking about changing.
Right. So this project that I've been blocked on, I don't want to like force my current ideas on what should happen. What do you recommend? Just like sit quietly and look out the window and kind of just let things flow without a timeline or just adding more space to it? Because that almost seems like, okay, now I'm not focused on it at all.
Well, and you just used the word should, so I would start there.
Stop it.
Toss that over your shoulder, not needed. You know, when we're working in the creative space, pausing is critical. Very frequently when I'm working with a client who's been so focused on doing a thing and it has to be the thing, but it's not feeling right, I say stop. Actually, I even go further. I was working with someone who's writing their PhD dissertation and was just super blocked. And I said, throw it away. And they were like, are you kidding me? Like, there's so much time I've invested in this. And I said, how much of that time has been actual productive work versus trying to make something fit? Like, you know, trying to shove your foot in the wrong size shoe. So this person was incredibly courageous, chunked it, did absolutely nothing.
Hold on my back.
I know. Did absolutely nothing for a week. And that was my prescription, let's say. Do nothing. Don't work on it. Don't think about it. Do nothing. Just that little pause shifted everything. This person came back, said, oh my gosh, I thought you were literally crazy. But during that pause, because I knew I'd chunked it, I was no longer trying to make it work, I got it. And then after that, it moved.
Wow. And I'm just curious, were they able to use any of the original and reshape it, or was it truly a brand new slate for them?
Well, we never forget things we've learned. I'm sure some of that, you know, played in and informed, but the direction was completely different.
Yeah, interesting. So what is your favorite exercise or technique for kind of unlocking this secret mind in our waking life? Is it that pause, or is there something else that you think is really exceptional?
Well, there's many things we can do to unlock the secret mind, but the most important thing is just to listen to it, because we absorb so much that thing that you talked about that happens to us when we're kids, of a parent saying, don't pay attention to your inner self in one way or another, the parent, the adult, whoever. So just deciding that my inner ideas or my images or my sleep time dreams might have something to say to me, and getting curious about it is the best first step.
I love that. So as we kind of wrap up, how would you even say to listen to yourself? I mean, when you've been so programmed to not do that, what's the first step to even inviting or welcoming that inner voice to even be heard in a very subtle form? Because a lot of us have lost that connection.
So That's why dreams are so great, because it's a lot harder to hear ourselves when we're awake, because we have that bouncer at the door we talked about that's batting away those ideas. So get a dream journal and start to write down your dreams, even if it doesn't seem like it's a dream to you. Whatever you wake up with, whether it's a snippet of a song or a color or a feeling or a thought or an idea, write it down. It's a dream. The more you do that, the more the dreams will become more elaborate, like the dream you shared today. And then when you have those dreams, get curious about it. Just ask the question, if I'm in an old house that I used to live in, what are my feelings around that? What was that time for me, that old time? And what might this injured mountain lion be? Just ask. Get curious about it. Get curious about the energy of it.
And I read in your book that some people say, well, I don't ever remember my dreams. And you had kind of a solution for them too. Can you add that one in here?
Yeah, exactly that. Get a dream journal. We remember our dreams. First of all, everybody dreams every night. That's been resolved in neuroscience for some time now. So what provokes dream recall is having the intention to do it. Even just having this conversation, anybody who's listening to this conversation is probably going to remember a dream tonight, because it's, you know, sort of like tugging at the ear and reminding us that we do that.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bonnie, for helping us to bring together the daydreams, the night dreams. And as you said, for yourself, it's a continuous pattern in your mind now to allow that space in your life for dreaming.
It's a continuous dialogue, because we don't stop being ourselves when we're asleep. We just go to a different expression of it. So, and thank you for having me. It's been great talking.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Bonnie, for being with us today as our special guest on the Yoga Therapy Hour. I wanted to finish today by just showing you a couple of websites that you could get in touch with Bonnie. One of them is bonniebuckner.com, BonnieBuckner, bonniebuckner.com. And of course, she has a picture of the book, The Secret Mind, and Unlock the Power of Dreams to Transform Your Life. And then she also has different ways you can learn with her around unlocking your potential: online classes, one-on-one dream work. She is at Kripalu, and that's interesting because most of us are yoga people. And then she has the Institute, International Institute for Dreaming and Imagery, which I find it fascinating that Bonnie is working with so many leaders, creatives, and high-level performers. That's really fascinating to me. If you go over to her other website called www.institutefordreamingandimagery.com, you'll also see many of her programs, classes, and offerings. I'm really fascinated by this, because not only does Patanjali in the Patanjali Yoga Sutra talk about the importance of examining our dreams as one way to know ourselves deeply and listen to our deeper selves. There's so much about that in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. So that lines right up with what we're talking about here. But I'm also interested in this because many of you know that for about 35 years, I've been a sports psychology consultant. It's kind of a side gig that I do for not a lot of people, but depending on, you know, if I feel connected, I'll take on a client or two. And that is all about imagining the potentials and unlocking the blocks. So when I look at Bonnie's book, I feel like, oh, there's potential there, even my sports psychology clients. So thank you, Bonnie, for being with us today. You're unlocking our potential through listening. And I loved your presence. I loved your energy. It was soft yet strong. And it was a pleasure to get to know Bonnie today. Thanks, everyone, for being with us. And we'll see you very soon next week. Thank you to our guests this week for sharing so generously with you, our listening audience. Sometimes do you sit and wonder, What could I do that would make a difference? Well, I think if every single one of us did something, we could make a difference in the world today. So the way that I and our team are making a difference is by producing the Yoga Therapy Hour. We're helping to show how it is that people suffer. That's part of being human. But there is a way to suffer less, or at the very least, accept the situations that we're in. So we hope that the Yoga Therapy Hour is inspiring you. This is our gift, our offering to you. And we encourage you to go out and find that thing that you can do to contribute to the world. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.